When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Give me some juice!
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's roll!
Welcome to another edition of the Giants Huddle Podcast, brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the New York Football Giants. I am John Schmelk. Joining us today, he joined us a couple years ago. Haven't talked to Derek in a while. Derek Klassen, who is with Bleacher Report. He does all of their skill position rankings, but I know, Derek, you're up to a whole lot more, too. So before we get started, first of all, thanks for being with us. Tell the folks where they can find all your great stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's really nice to be back. You guys can find me on Twitter at QBClass if you want to. Like John said, you can find all my NFL draft work over at Bleacher Report. I do all of our skill position players. We also have a great other bunch of guys that do all the other positions if you want to check out their stuff as well. They do a really good job. And then I also do some quarterback charting work over at Reception Perception. I did the NFL charting last offseason, and then obviously this, you know, draft cycle, I've gotten to all the quarterbacks. I think I've gotten through 9, and I think 7 or 8 of the profiles are already up, and we'll have the rest of them before we actually get to draft night. So definitely go check that out.
Yeah, and we're going to have Derek's colleague Brandon Thorne on this week as well to talk about the offensive line prospects. So don't worry, we have Brandon every year as well. We like to kind of get guys that study these guys, and you do a lot of quarterback work, Derek, to your point. And I think this is a very interesting year. Before we get into the players, in investigating these quarterbacks this year, I've talked to Kurt Warner on the show. I've talked to former GMs, Thomas Dimitroff, Randy Mueller, talked to former scouts. And all of them had different reasons why evaluating college quarterbacks is so hard and why the NFL is frankly so bad at it. We had Stephen Ruiz on from The Ringer as well, who does a lot of his own, you know, quarterback charting and stuff. And where I've kind of come down to is that me as a layman, and you who is more into it than I am, but still a layman in this, it's almost very difficult to impossible to figure out how a guy processes and thinks and goes through reads without knowing what the coaches are telling them. Kurt Warner told me this, a guy that wears a gold jacket in the Hall of Fame to play quarterback. So I'm going to go with that, and I'm just going to look at traits. And then the GMs tell me that, yeah, you can figure some of that stuff out when you meet with these guys privately and you put them on the board, you have them break down video and stuff. You can figure some of that processing stuff out, yet they still get this stuff wrong half the time. So what's the difficulty for you in trying to project these college quarterbacks to the pros? What do you think you have a good handle on, and what's some of the stuff you still struggle on a little bit?
I mean, I think you kind of nailed it with the processing stuff. And I think you can kind of get a gauge for how quickly a guy does things. Like, I think you can, you know, just how quick his footwork is, how quick he's going 1 to 2 to 3. I think you can get a sense for that. You know, how quick does he react to pressure and boom, knows where his outlet is, or boom, knows, you know, he can get to a backside thrower, knows he's pressured and knows he has enough time. Like, that is processing in a sense. Sure. But in terms of, you know, understanding the process of, like, how is he going to adapt to a true 5-step drop from shotgun NFL passing concept, it's like these guys just don't run them. Like, they it's just not in the offense for a lot of these guys. And there are certain exceptions, you know, the LSU offense has some NFL elements to it. The Washington offense had some NFL elements to it, but again, it's still not all the way. Like, you know, the Washington offense, I think, is actually a good one to start with. People look at it and it seems NFL-ish, right? Like, they're very aggressive. It's a lot of 5-step drop. Like, they're playing from shotgun, but they only run like vertical 5-step drop. Everyone's going down the field, 5 out in the concept, like running backs out. And it's like, okay, that is NFL-ish. But also, NFL teams are only running concepts like that, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a game, maybe, because it's just a lot of investment. And when you're, you know, 5 in the concept, it's very high risk in terms of protection. But Washington just had the players, they had the offensive tackle talent, they had the wide receiver talent, where they could call it 20 times a game. And it's like, okay, they're kind of doing NFL stuff, but the degree to what they're doing is just not actually, it's not going to happen in the NFL. And I think that's important for a guy like Penix, because when he gets to the NFL, he's going to have to throw the 1 to 10 yard, you know, quick game area a lot more.
And over the middle of the field, by the way, which he had some quick stuff outside against off coverage, but there was nothing in that, you know, 5 to 20 yard area in the middle of the field in traffic. There was none of that.
Exactly. And they could just get away with not having to do it. But in the NFL, that's just not going to be the case. Like, there are very, very rare instances where you can get away with operating that way. You know, Russell Wilson at his peak, I guess, kind of operated that way.
Sure.
Jalen Hurts, kind of, you know, he's not a guy who throws the middle of the field a lot, but Jalen is actually good throwing quick game. So, you know what I mean? Like, so even that is different from what Michael Penix has been doing. So I think that's really the key, is like understanding that what these guys were asked to do in college, even if sometimes it looks NFL-ish, it's just not really what you're going to get in the NFL. And 9 times out of 10, there's going to be a pretty big learning curve for what these guys were doing at the college level to what they're going to do in the pros. And so, again, to your point, even talking to guys like Kurt Warner, if even they're getting their heads spinning over what these guys are doing from college going to the NFL, it's really hard for a guy like me, you know, who has I haven't played with the greatest show on turf, you know.
Yeah, I look at it and I could waste, you know, it takes me, first of all, I tried to go through these top two quarterbacks. I watched every one of their dropbacks this year, the consensus top four. I watched probably half of Nix and half of Penix. And I could sit there and spend, you know, each game takes like 4 or 5 days. Like, it's a lot of snaps. You have to watch a lot of stuff. You can't just zip through these quarterback plays fast. And I could sit and take another 5 weeks of my life and try to figure out processing. It's not worth it for me. To me, if Kurt Warner can't figure out, I'm not even going to bother attempting to do it. So, let's get to your quarterbacks here, Derek. And you look at the rankings, and I feel like this class is very polarizing depending on who you talk to, right? And first, before we start, why don't you give the fans your stack here of how you see these first 5 or 6 guys, and then we'll kind of dip into it a little bit, because I think you see them a little bit more similar than I do as compared to some of the other guys we've had on the show.
Yeah, so for me, I think this class can be broken into basically 3 different little tiers. The first tier to me is Drake May and Caleb Williams. I have Drake May is like slightly my 1A to Caleb's 1B, and I know that, you know, it seems like a hot take to people. For me, it has nothing to do with like being lower on Caleb. I think he is as good as everybody else thinks that he is. I just also think that Drake May is insanely good at football. You know, Drake May to me, like, actually, this applies to both of these guys. My guiding principles for quarterback play, especially for prospects where, again, the processing is harder to see, you got to have like S-tier arm talent. And I think Drake and Caleb pretty easily check that box, especially Caleb. Like, even the flexibility in his arm even gives him a little something more that Drake doesn't quite have. And then you just want guys who are very tough in the pocket, mature in the pocket, understand how to make throws from tight, cluttered spaces. I think you see that all over Caleb and Drake's film.
Well, they had to. Their offensive line sucked.
They were terrible. Like, these guys were under pressure all the time. And I think that's actually, it's almost an interesting thing into the way that they played. Like, you know, people will knock Caleb for, oh, you know, he's doing too much of the runaround stuff. And then with Drake, it's, you know, oh, he's drifting in the pocket a little too much and he runs himself into pressure. It's like, well, they're kind of preemptively doing stuff because they know they're going to get pressured. And so, of course, when you're trying to make high risk plays like that, sometimes they're going to be wrong and it's going to look stupid. And Caleb is going to leave a pocket early, or Drake is going to drift right into a twist and get himself pressured. But I think with those two, it's like 4 times out of 5, they're doing the right thing and they're bailing their team out and giving their team a chance that, you know, a normal, even just like an above average or good college quarterback would not give their chances in those moments. And so that's kind of the stuff I look at those two. And I think those guys just check those boxes with flying colors. And then just the creativity in their game is with both of them is phenomenal. So I am very much all in on those guys. Either one, I would take it first overall, wouldn't even think about it. Then I think you get into the next tier with Jaden Daniels and JJ McCarthy. And they are more to me, you know, I think a lot of people see them as top 10 caliber players. They're probably going to go there, so I get it. I'm not quite there. Those guys are more to me, you know, back end of the first, early second, quarterbacks that you can win games with. I mean, these are guys like, you know, Andy Dalton went in this range, Colin Kaepernick went in this range, Derek Carr went in this range, Teddy Bridgewater. Like, you can get functional good quarterbacks in this range. It's just, I think these are the types of guys that are either going to have, in JJ's case, I think a little bit of a longer development curve. I think there's, you know, some stuff that it's going to take him time. And he's a young player. There's nothing wrong with that. Or in Jaden Daniels' case, I think you're going to need a pretty specific set of circumstances in his offense to make him work. You know, in his specific case, if he could land somewhere that could like approximate what Philly is doing, just in terms of, you know, high quality offensive line, and then the way that they've set up their offense in terms of, you know, ton of downfield shots, ton of easy quick game with RPOs, doesn't have to throw the middle of the field a lot, that type of stuff, I think would be really, really useful for him. Then you get into that third tier of the, you know, maybes, like the 5% chance that they could be something. That's where you get Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler, and Michael Penix. Of the three, I kind of like Nix and Rattler for obviously very, very different reasons. Nix to me is more like, you know, I think straight out of the box, he's Gardner Minshew. And then maybe with a little bit of development, he turns into Andy Dalton. And that doesn't sound sexy, but hey, man, Andy Dalton has made the playoffs. He's been on good teams. He's been on teams that have won divisions. Like, if you put enough around him, he can be a really solid player for you. And then Spencer Rattler is just the complete opposite. Like, there's a 95% chance he just completely booms out of the league, not even for any of the off-field stuff, but like just the way he plays. Like, he probably is too aggressive. He's not as athletic as he thinks he is, you know, with how much he moves around the pocket, and he's gonna get himself into trouble. But there's that 5% chance you can hone it in, and he kind of has the two things I talked about with S-tier arm talent and managing the pocket. So I'm at least kind of bought in on him there. So I think those three tiers are kind of like how I'd break this quarterback class up.
All right, so let's start at the top and dig into to Drake May a little bit. I'm going to slide Caleb Williams aside just because I think he's awesome too, and I think so do the Bears. So it's going to be irrelevant whether or not the Giants think he's awesome. So Drake May, how would you explain away, maybe explain away is the wrong expression, but how would you put into your analysis the scattershot accuracy? Because that's the one thing that did jump out at me watching him. And I don't want to call him inaccurate, because there's so many throws where he just puts the ball into the smallest box in between like two or three defenders, right on the guy's numbers, right on his hands, and he makes great throws. So I don't think he's an inaccurate quarterback, but he does have some throws where you sit there and like, boy, what the hell happened on that? Did it just slip? And is that just a mechanical thing that you think can be smoothed out? How do you kind of put that into your evaluation?
I think three things are true that make this, you know, give his film this feeling. One of them is his fault. Two of them, to me, are really not. The first, like you said, his mechanics can be a little, he's going to need to get cleaned up. He has specifically a lower half problem where he plays with kind of a tight base and his footwork is a little bit all over the place. I think you'll notice, especially when he's moving to his right and operating to his right, he'll swing his like entire body way too far, like almost to the sideline. He just ends up at a really weird tight angle to the receiver, and he can't get the rotation, the snap that you want, and that's going to lead to some inaccuracy. So I think that is part of his issue. You know, he's a 21-year-old, like he's coming from an air raid offense. I think it's perfectly reasonable to think that he can develop that. Obviously, you never know, but among quarterback issues, footwork is one of the more fixable ones. So I'm not like too worried about that. I think the other thing to keep in mind with Drake May, he is making really hard throws all of the time, like from cluttered pockets. Like he had one of the highest ADOTs, you know, average depth of target in the class. And keep in mind, like I said, he's doing that from a lot of the time, really cluttered pockets, down in games, like when teams know they're passing. Like he is just, the degree of difficulty on a lot of his throws is higher than when you watch guys like Jaden Daniels or Bo Nix or even JJ McCarthy. Like he's just being asked to do and kind of opting into more difficult throws. And I think just naturally you're going to have, you know, more misses because of that. You know, it's harder to complete passes 20 yards down the field than it is five. The other thing that I think is important to keep in mind with North Carolina, this offense is like not very well ran. I don't think. I mean, Bryson Nesbitt is like a solid tight end, and he, I think, does a good job of being where he needs to be and doing what he needs to do. Almost every other receiver on that team was like actively working against Drake May at
times. Stopping their routes, like for no reason. I don't understand.
Yes, like stopping their routes, or, you know, they would run a lot of like benders, you know, seam benders in that offense, and they would just be, you know, snapping it off at the wrong time. Like guys in zone coverage just not being where they need to be. Like, and because of the way that Drake plays, like he is very much a guy who is like, I'm going to try to fit it into this tiny window where I think my guy's going to be, you know, like he's very aggressive. Like Trevor Lawrence will run into trouble because he tries to do this where he's like, I can be perfect. I know where the perfect throw is. It's like, okay, that's cool. But if your receiver's not in the right spot, then you just look like an idiot. And I think that happened far too many times at North Carolina. And I think that like warps the perception of some of the misses that Drake may had. So those are the three things that I think kind of fall into why Drake is can look inaccurate in times. I do agree. Like for as much as I love him, he's not like, you know, super, super like he's not going to walk into the league and be one of the most accurate guys. I do think he's going to be more in the, you know, maybe Matthew Stafford, where it's like the best throws from Matthew Stafford look great and they're more valuable than his misses. But he does have three misses a game where you're like, dude, there's no way you missed that.
No, absolutely right. And I'll just point this out, too. He's a guy that is not one of these guys that played quarterback their whole lives with all these private quarterback coaches. He was a multi-sport athlete. You made the point. He's still young, redshirt sophomore. You know, people talk about it with McCarthy. May's in the same exact boat. So I do think there is a lot of room for him to fine-tune his game going forward. All right, let's jump to Jaden Daniels. He's my third quarterback, too. I have him. Probably I look at him a little bit more favorably than you do, Derek, only because I think he's got a pretty high ceiling with his general accuracy, his mobility, his ability to get the ball down the field with touch. But I want you to dive into a little bit more what you talked about in your first answer. Why do you think he needs that right structure around him with the strong offensive line, which, by the way, he had at LSU? You put Jaden Daniels in the UNC system, he looks a whole lot different than he did at LSU. And he hits the monster wide receivers there as well. So what are the things in your charting of Daniels, whether it's handling pressure, where he's throwing the football, that you really want to make sure he has that infrastructure around him to utilize those talents?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start off. It's actually funny you say the high ceiling thing. I actually kind of view him as like a high floor prospect.
Oh, but you know what? I meant to say high floor. Well, that's my bad. Yes, I see him. He is a high floor prospect because of his mobility and his, yes, correct, high floor. I'm sorry.
That's exactly. It's those two things. Like, I mean, the mobility alone is just going to, one, it's just going to make you more valuable out of the gate. Like, you're going to have something to lean on when things go wrong. And that mobility is going to give you, you know, teams are going to be more willing to let you grow and give you more chances because you, it's like, okay, if he's not a great passer right now, at least he can do this. You know what I mean? Like, you at least have something to fall back on. I think that's exactly really valuable for him. And then he is really accurate. Like, I'll talk in a minute about some of the throws I think he just won't make. But when he does make throws, he really is accurate. I think 1 to 10 yard area, especially when they're running like timing, like they ran a bunch of hitch routes in that offense, really, really good at just, you know, the timing of them, the rhythm of them, putting them exactly where they need to be. Obviously his downfield work is incredible. When he chooses to throw the intermediate area, it looks good, especially I think outside the numbers, like some of his touch on like sail routes, corners, it's delightful. It's really, really good. And then I think as a decision maker, he can be a little late. I think especially when he's working backside, things can take a little bit longer than you would like, but he is not a quarterback who puts the ball in harm's way. And that's, you know, in general, I would rather have a quarterback who is too aggressive and I have to, like, you know, work him down and like, okay, he can do the really hard stuff and we'll get him to learn the easy stuff.
Hence Daniels your love for Drake May.
Hence my love for Drake May. and Jaden is kind of the opposite, right? Where it's like, he doesn't really do a lot of the super hard, like anticipate into a tight window, you know, make a super difficult throw, but he's not a guy who's going to just make this bonkers interception that you're like, dude, what the hell was that? Like, you're going to yell at him coming off the sideline. He's not a guy who's going to do that. And he's going to protect the ball. And so again, I think that kind of speaks to the high floor thing. Like, this is a guy who's just not going to mess the offense up. And he has certain traits that he can fall back on. Where I get questions with Jaden Daniels is, one, you know, you already mentioned it, the middle of the field. He can make those throws. He has enough velocity in his arm. The accuracy is really good. You see enough of those glimpses on film. The problem is just, I think he kind of struggles to anticipate when windows are going to open, especially against zone coverage. He's just not a guy who is throwing, you know, right past the ear hole of a linebacker. And I know that sounds just like a nitpicky thing, but like, that's what the NFL is. Like, the college game in that sense is different. And so I think you need guys who have the, you know, not just ability like he has to throw the middle of the field, but you got to have the willingness and aggression and, to a degree, the blind faith to throw the middle of the field. And I haven't seen it from his film. And for a fifth year guy, that's a little bit concerning. I'm especially a guy who, again, has started all five of those seasons. You know, it's not like he was redshirting a couple of them or whatever. The other thing that kind of, you know, bugs me with Jaden Daniels, and this goes back to what I said with the pocket stuff, with some of the other guys I like, Jaden Daniels, obviously when he gets pressured and he has to go, great, he's a really good athlete and he can get out there. I think he struggles to keep his eyes up and manage the pocket and really slide around, keep a firm base.
He actually ran into a lot of sacks early in the year, in my opinion.
Yes, especially, you know, the Florida State game, he ran into like two or three that were like, come on, buddy. Like, I know you're better than this. So he definitely does a lot of that where his pocket management is just not all the way there. And then, you know, even when he does leave the pocket, it is obviously valuable that he can just scramble past the line of scrimmage and run for yards. But you see from all of the best NFL quarterbacks, when they're outside the pocket, they are pass first. Patrick Mahomes is like this. Josh Allen learned to be like this. So granted, like, you can figure this out. It's you know, it's not like he's completely doomed in this sense. Like Lamar Jackson, you know, I think people think of Lamar as a runner. No, dude, like when Lamar's out of the pocket, he is looking to throw down the field. And Jaden is just more to me like Jalen Hurts or Justin Fields, where when they're out of the pocket, they're thinking run first. They're thinking, how far can I go? And so that to me is like a little bit prohibitive of like how high you can really climb as a quarterback. So like I said, I think Jaden does some good stuff, and I think it's pretty reasonable to expect him to be a productive quarterback. It's just when we talk about, you know, taking a guy top five with what I think his ceiling is, it just gets hard.
You love turf. You're good at it. So you start a turf biz. Business grows, your savings grow. Become the most celebrated name in turf. Are you ready for all that life brings?
Yeah, I think, frankly, I think Daniel Jones is one of those guys that when he scrambles, he's kind of looking to run rather than kind of throw on the move a lot, too. So I'm with you on that. All right, let's go to J.J. McCarthy here. What I wonder about him, Derek, I feel with fairly high confidence he's going to be a solid NFL quarterback, because I think he is a fairly accurate guy in those intermediate areas. He throws a ton in the middle of the field. You know, Michigan just runs overs and crossers all day. That's what half his tape is. He's pretty good on third and seven and long. I did sort through that, and I just watched his third and longs, and he's actually pretty good on those. I don't see him throw with enough touch. His deep ball is, I'm not going to say non-existent, but it's darn close. There's just not a lot of that on tape. When he does it, it either flares out of bounds or it's very flat. And I'm just not sure I see the path for him to becoming one of these, you know, top seven or eight quarterbacks where I think he's going to be good. I'm just not willing. To me, I have a hard time selling myself at six when one of these other wide receivers are sitting there to pick a quarterback that I'm not sure has that same upside as a guy like me. Or even, frankly, if a guy like Jaden Daniels can figure out to throw over the middle and look up when he's scrambling, I think he has that upside too. Now, he's a little more ways to get there, but if he could figure it out, he can get there. I have a hard time seeing McCarthy get there. What's your view on McCarthy? Why do you have him as more of a second round guy, which is kind of where I have him to, end of the first round, kind of start of the second round type of talent?
I mean, I agree with pretty much everything that you said there. And he's a tricky one for me because I think, you know, his arm, I'm so glad you bring up the touch. Like, I think people project onto him like this super high arm talent. And it's like, okay, he throws the ball really hard. He does. Like, he can get RPMs, man. He can make that ball spin, and he can throw it very far down the field. The problem is he's very much a thrower where when he's getting that velocity, it takes every fiber in his being to get there. And he really struggles to take heat off. That's why you see, like you said, his deep ball is very flat. Like, he's throwing it. He's throwing like frozen ropes, which, like, I don't know, like, in the you need to put some air under it. Why do you think Russell Wilson has one of the best deep balls ever? It's because he throws that thing into the stratosphere.
Yeah. Like, and to your point, I think his accuracy does struggle too when he gets pressure, because he can't get that full step into his throw. And that's when he can get a little scatter shot, when he can't step into the throw, when he has to lean back, go off his back foot and things like that.
I agree. He's like just a kind of a rigid thrower. This is where actually I think my comparison for him, it's not perfect, it's not one-to-one, but he's very Baker Mayfield-esque, where like Baker is a dude who can put a ton of velocity on the ball. He can throw it into tight windows if it's just like, you know, a dig route, or like you said, like an over route over the middle where it's, you know, you can just throw it straight to the guy. When he's got to add a little touch, he's got to put a little air under the ball on, you know, some of these sail routes, corner routes, like you said, the deep ball. Like, he just doesn't quite have that. And then again, I think that's true, like you said, under pressure. JJ's actually very tough. Like, he's extremely willing to take those hits. He can actually move around in the pocket a little bit. That is part of why I have like a little bit of faith, you know, a little bit of optimism for him. It's like the pocket management is good and he's tough. But like you said, if the angle is just a little bit wrong with where he's getting pressured or something, he just doesn't quite have the flexibility and maneuverability that you see from obviously Caleb, but I think to a different degree, Drake May as well. And so that's where I get a little bit concerned with JJ. So I do think there is stuff to like he can throw the ball really hard. you know, the pocket management, the pocket toughness, I think is good. There is a little bit of like creativity to his game. Like obviously, because Michigan threw like 24 times a game, you didn't get to see him do a ton of stuff outside the pocket and making plays, but he can do it. Like, I think there's enough there, and he's a good enough athlete that you'll probably get in the NFL one or two plays a game where the defense just comes away thinking like, Jesus, how did he pull that off?
Yeah, there's a couple plays where he's running towards the line of scrimmage. The defense think he's going to run. And then, well, he's almost running full speed forward. And he throws this dart over the middle. I'm like, all right, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and like that. That's if you can get exact. That's a great point where like when you are really selling the fact that you're about to run and a half yard before the line of scrimmage, you just rip it 15 yards down the field. Hard to defend, man. And he's got that in his bag. And so I do think there is enough optimism to see why JJ would work. To your point, like he can probably get into that, you know, 12 to 18 range pretty reasonably. But I'm kind of with you where it's like, man, it would take 3-4 years of a lot of development, I think, to get him into the top six, top seven, where he's just, you know, a consistent conference championship type of quarterback. So I still like, and again, that's a good quarterback, right? Like that's a valuable guy to have. Is that one you want to take it fourth overall? I don't know. You're betting on a lot of projection.
If you're the Broncos sticking and picking, that's fine. But they're right. not going to be able to stick and pick and take J.J. McCarthy, which is the problem. No, I'm with you 100%. You already talked about Bo Nix a little bit. I thought you did a good thumbnail on him. Same thing with Rattler. You kind of – Penix is, I think, he's your sixth-ranked quarterback, correct, if I'm not mistaken?
A seventh. I like Rattler a little bit more even.
So. Seventh. I'm sorry. You're right. Rattler's in there too. So I have people here that – not in the building, but fans that yell at me for why aren't you talking about Penix at six? And my argument is twofold. And then I'll have you give your take. One, I know his numbers when you sort through all these different sorting systems against pressure are good. I get it. I don't like the way he plays against pressure. There's a lot of like leaning backwards and flicking the ball. And I'm not going to say he looks panicked, but he doesn't look comfortable back there when he gets pressure in his face. And that's in front of an offensive line that was one of the best in college football. So that's the first thing for me. I know he tested well. I don't think he's very functional as an athlete. Like he doesn't move side to side well and evade rush. He has little steps he can do. But again, when the offensive line's not as good, I worry about it. The second thing, and this is what I really get heat on from people, and we talked about the middle of the field stuff. I do not think he's as accurate as people think he is. He makes a lot of good downfield passes. There's just as many passes that are in the middle field and even deep where he's putting it behind guys, where if he puts it in front of them, you know, where it's supposed to be, he can get another 15, 20 yards out of the play. Now he's lucky to play with three receivers that are awesome and can adjust and still make these catches. But I don't feel he has that pinpoint accuracy to hit guys in stride consistently, especially in the intermediate areas that other people do. And that's why I have him again. I have more of a second round grade on Penix, where if the Giants are sitting at 47 or 49 and like, all right, you see these high end arm challenge, you throw down the field. Cool. I'm good rolling the dice there. You want to get another quarterback in the building. Now I just basically filibustered, but now give me your take on Penix and kind of your thoughts on the player and why you have him as quarterback seven for you.
I mean, basically the same stuff. I think the pressure one is a good place to start. Again, like you can look at some of the overall production under pressure and it looks good, but it's like, yeah, his response to pressure is I'm either going to throw the ball away or I'm going to throw it up to my receiver who's about to go seventh overall or whatever. And it's like, okay, like that is something, but it's in the NFL, it's not going to be that simple. You're going to have a lot more. I mean, that's why I think you see guys like Caleb and Drake, and even to different degrees, Jaden Daniels and JJ McCarthy, like, to one degree or another, when they get pressured, they can do something. Is it perfect? I don't know, but they can do something. And Michael Penix, to me, just doesn't have that. Like, to your point, he's very much a thrower who he leans back a lot, or he just doesn't have answers to get outside the pocket. I think his scramble rate was like lower than 1% or around 1%. Like, that's just in the NFL, that's just not going to fly, man. Like in 1980, maybe, but like today, that's just, there's no shot. And then to your point about accuracy, I think that is absolutely spot on. Like, so in my accuracy charting, Michael Penix was, let me find it real quick. Okay. 66.3% overall adjusted accuracy. And when I say adjusted, I like score it a little differently just based on like the yardage ranges on the field and stuff. that is worse than all of the other quarterbacks that we've talked about, except for Spencer Rattler. Spencer Rattler is at about the same range, but it's much worse than Bo Nix. It's much worse than Jaden Daniels. It's worse than Drake May. It's worse than JJ McCarthy. It's worse than Caleb Williams. On its face, that's not great. It's a lot worse when you consider, again, like you said, three top 60 picks at receiver, probably a couple of guys at tight end who are going to get looks in the NFL, an NFL offensive line. You know, Troy Fautanu is probably going to go top 15. His right tackle is going to go in the top two rounds. Like, you had about as much as you could get in terms of, I mean, his head coach just went to go replace Nick Saban. His offensive coordinator just went to go be the coordinator at the Seattle Seahawks. Like, he had everything you could want. And still just not an accurate passer. And the numbers there are concerning. And then when you watch him, you just don't see it. I think especially in the 1 to 10 yard area, he just doesn't have that timing, that rhythm, that flexibility to throw the 1 to 10 yard area very well. And I think that that's a big hindrance for him. But like I said, you know, when I was talking about the Washington offense earlier, they just didn't have to do it because they were so good at other stuff. So it was like, whatever, you just don't have to interface with that problem. The other thing is, I really struggle with touch with him. I just don't think he has it very much. I think you see when he's trying to throw some of these corner routes, some of these sail routes, if somebody's undercutting the route and he's got to put some air under it, he just really struggles to, I think, get the ball up and down. You even see that on some of the deep over routes in their offense. Like if a guy is playing like trail man coverage and he's a little bit under the route, Penix just really struggles to, I think, get the ball up and down and give his guy a chance. So he's very good at throwing like directly to a spot, but you got to have way more clubs in your bag in the NFL. And I really struggle to see it. And for me, that's really concerning for a guy who is, you know, going to be 24 years old, has played, you know, obviously he's been on and off for injuries, but like he's effectively started for 5 or 6 seasons. So you would think he would have a little bit more at this point. And I just don't quite see it yet.
And the strength is of his game is supposed to be him being a pocket passer that can get the ball downfield. So Derek, I'm with you. I think we're very much in line here. And as two guys that watched a ton of these snaps, I'm happy that we see things kind of the same way. Giants Huddle is brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the Giants. From game day to everyday, Citizens is made ready for Giant fans with insights, guidance, and solutions. Learn more at citizensbank.com. All right, let's jump to the wide receivers here. Marvin Harrison's awesome. We both agree. 6'4 guy that runs like a 6-foot guy, is an unbelievable route runner, catches contested balls, maybe not the most explosive with the ball in his hands, but I mean, I just think he's a machine at wide receiver, Derek. You don't have to spend a long time on him because he's not getting to the Giants more likely than not, but he is your number one guy, correct?
Yeah, with a bullet. Like, you know, we'll talk about the other guys and they're great. I love Roma Dunze. I love Malik Nabers. Marvin is like one of one, man. This guy is crazy. Like you said, 6'4", almost 200 pounds, moves like a guy who is 6 foot. Like he has the route running ability of like, I don't know, Stephon Diggs, obviously incredible route runner, but to your point, Stephon Diggs is like 6 foot, 195.
Right.
But Marvin is 6'4", 200 pounds. And he's just as fast, just as fluid, just as like explosive as a route runner. What also is really, really incredible about Marvin, he's open all the time with his route running, but even when he's not, the ball tracking and hands are just like, holy smokes, dude. Yeah. And he's not like, you know, bullying people the way that, you know, Brandon Marshall or you know, maybe Drake London, but just there's this gracefulness to the way that he finds the ball and just plucks it out of the air. Like there's no, if it's within an arm length, he can find it no matter where it is. He's going to find it with ease. And I think that's just unbelievably valuable, especially if you're going to pair him with, you know, one of these other franchise quarterbacks. So I could gush about him forever. He's such a phenomenal prospect.
Yeah, and late hands too. He brings the hands up late to make the catches, so corners don't know the ball is coming, all that stuff. He's just so nuanced. You could tell that his dad was one of the most technical wide receivers of all time. And you really can. All right. Now, I find it interesting because everyone has these two guys close and understandably so. I like Malik Nabers a little bit more than Adunze because of the explosiveness. You literally have them like as close of a grade as you possibly can next to each other. But you have Adunze a little bit higher than Nabers. Tell me why.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like my Drake and Caleb thing. It's like, I think Nabers is fantastic the way that everyone else does. I think the difference between the two, between Rome and Malik Nabers is Nabers to me is almost more in like the, you know, Jalen Waddle, Amari Cooper, where it's like, this is not purely an outside receiver. This is like a slot Z hybrid. We are playing him to get the ball in his hands. He is not a, you know, contested catch guy. He's not necessarily our outside the numbers guy. He can do it, but he is not like your set it and forget it, put him at X type of guy.
I agree with that.
There's going to take a little bit more. You got to think about what you want to do with him in the offense. And that's not bad. Like, there are plenty of the best receivers in the NFL who are in that role. Like, CeeDee Lamb is not a set it and forget it outside receiver. Cooper Kupp, obviously. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Again, Jalen Waddle. Like, there are great receivers who can fit into this role. It's just that for me, when I think I'm picking a top five receiver, I'm going to a little bit lean towards the guy. Like, if I'm basically splitting hairs the way I am with these two, I'm probably just going to prefer the guy who is a set it and forget it X receiver. And that to me is Roma Dunze. Like, that guy, you just put him outside the numbers in any offense and he's getting 1,000 yards. Like, he just, I think he's a phenomenal route runner for his size. I think the ball skills are just bonkers. Like, if there's any trait that any of these guys have that is actually close to Marvin, it's Roma Dunze's ball skills. Like, just the way that he can find the ball, the way that he can fight for it in the air, he times all of his jumps well, you know, late hands like you were saying with Marvin. Like, he just, it's unbelievable what he can do finding the ball. And then he's, I think, an underrated athlete. Like, I think because he moves so smooth, and then I think because he had so many of those contested catches, we're just like underrating how fast he is. Like, he's actually, like, he gets down the field really well and he separates really cleanly. It's almost like, you remember a couple of years ago when people didn't think Drake London could separate, and it was just like his quarterbacks just were throwing him closed all the time.
By the way, even Jamar Chase, people had that worry with too, where he didn't have a ton of separation on some of those deep routes.
100%. And it feels more like that than it does a Laquan Treadwell or whatever, where it's like, this guy actually just can't run away from people. And so that's why I'm just super bought in on Roma Dunze. And the last thing I'll say too, so I put my grade on those two receivers initially, and I actually had Malik Nabers a little bit higher and then Roma Dunze slightly behind him. But then it was after I charted each of their quarterbacks that I kind of started to fall in love with Rome, because it just kind of gave me a different perspective where it's like, when I'm, obviously, I didn't think any less of Nabers when I was watching Jane Daniels, but when I was watching Penix, it just, every play, Rome is right where he needs to be, making crazy plays all the time. And it's just like, he kind of just creeps up on you. You're like, man, this dude is never making a bad play. And I kind of fell in love with that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, Odunze is the type of guy that I have trouble with sometimes, because I do wonder, against that, you know, really high caliber NFL cornerback athletes, man to man coverage, bump and run, can he get enough separation? But then I watch him and it's like, he only needs to get a little bit. With his ball skills and his size and his strength, it's like he knows, I need to get this amount of separation to get for his version of open and make catches. So I'm trying to constantly battle myself, not expecting a guy of that size and weight with that type of strength to be able to separate like these smaller receivers, but it's something that I constantly have to fight myself on.
I mean, then that's fair, but that is a great point. Like, his, you know, what is good separation for Roma Dunze is different than what is good separation for like a Jalen Waddle. Cause like, he's not going to be as good making those catches with a quarterback, with a corner draped over him. So he needs another half step. Whereas Roma Dunze, yeah, to your point, he has a little bit of flexibility to not necessarily need it, even though I think he can get it.
All right, so let's put you in the Giants' shoes. Obviously, if somehow Drake May's available at 6 or even a trade up to 3 or 4, you think that would make sense for them, correct? Given your love for the player?
Oh, I'd do it faster than they even realize it's possible. Like, the card would be in so fast.
All right, now here's the difference. Let's say that target would be J.J. McCarthy, or even for you a Jaden Daniels. Given the importance of the quarterback position, would you pull the trigger on that, or would you just settle in and say, nope, Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze are awesome, I'm just going to pick one of those two wide receivers and figure out quarterback later?
It's always tough because, like, you know, it is the thing of, like, if you hit on the quarterback, it is more valuable than any other player. Like, you could draft Davante Adams at 6th overall, and it would not be as valuable as having the, you know, 8th best quarterback if that's what Jaden or JJ become.
Correct.
I think it's such a steep price for those two players, especially if they were to have to trade up to 4. But even at 6 for me, I think it's a little rich, whereas like, I just look at guys like Rome and Nabers, where I'm just like, especially Rome, like Nabers, I think actually has a higher ceiling than Odunze, but like Rome, it's just like, I would be stunned if he's anything less than like a 900 yard receiver, like just absolutely flabbergasted. I would love to take that at six overall, especially the thing I'll say about that too. Odunze to me fits more of like what the Giants are missing. Like, yeah, they don't have this just like X outside the numbers, go make contested catches guy. Whereas like Neighbors, they have guys who fit that role, obviously that are not nearly as good as Malik Neighbors, but at least kind of can fit into what he does. Whereas like Odunze is like, they just don't have a guy like that.
Yeah, I think Odunze makes Wandell Robinson a better slot player. He makes Jalen Hyatt a better speed player. I'm with you. And again, not that Neighbors would be a bad fit. And that's where I actually struggle with it, because I think Odunze is a better fit for what they have, even though I like Neighbors slightly more. And everything you hear about Odunze as a guy just tells you he's going to be like a captain within a year, and he's going to be a leader in that locker room. So it's just funny how you look at it. All right, let's go a couple other wide receivers deep, because I feel like I love how you have some of these guys ranked. It's a little bit different. We have not had a lot of Keon Coleman love on our shows here. I'm not a big Coleman guy. I have him as a second-round player. You have him as your wide receiver five. So tell me why. And again, I told you, I struggle with these type of guys that don't separate, right? So it makes sense why I would have him lower. Why are you still a Keon Coleman believer?
Yeah, it's almost funny you say that. You know, you kind of struggle with guys who don't separate. And I totally get that. I tend to fall in love with guys who just catch the freaking ball, man. Like, I just, after charting so many quarterbacks of guys just being in the wrong spot, can't adjust to the ball, all that stuff. Coleman to me, just like, I mean, he's built like a true X receiver. You know, he's like 6'4", 215 or something. Just built like a guy who can go get the ball. I think like making those in the air acrobatic contested catches, he has, if you just pulled the five best clips of any receiver in this class, he might have the five best. Like, his are just disgusting when he's dunking on a guy. And I think that that's super valuable. But then even over the middle, like he's made some really tough catches in traffic and stuff. And I that's just something to me that I think is pretty valuable. I agree that as a separator, especially down the field, you know, he probably has average speed. And then his separation ability, you know, I think at Michigan State, he actually looked a lot more explosive and snappy as a route runner than he
ever
did. I'll
have to go back and watch it. I have not watched his Michigan State stuff. I'll go back and look at that this week.
Yeah, like I fell in love with him at Michigan State. And so maybe I'm still like over, you know, putting too many eggs in the basket of what he was at Michigan State. But I just thought he was a little bit more snappy than a little bit better of a route runner. Still not like a great separator, but good enough for his size to be in the Brandon Marshall type of, you know, thing. And then I just think with the ball in his hands, he is, again, he doesn't have that elite long speed where he's just going to break away from guys. But in terms of turning a 5-yard hitch into 15, man, he's got it. Like, he just instantly turns into a running back, really powerful, explosive mover, great balance. I think he's got that vision that you want. You know, he to me is just, I think I agree, you know, in terms of if you're swinging for the ceiling, he just doesn't have the long speed to really be that. But to me, as a guy, you can just set on the outside and be a really consistent presence and give you some really good, tough physical yards after the catch. To me, he's got it. And that's the type of player I like to fall in love with. He to me feels a lot like, you know, again, maybe he doesn't raise the ceiling of your offense, but he, to me, I think just does a lot of stuff that like gives you some meat and bones to the offense, which I think is really valuable.
It's always nice to meet another member of the Jalen McMillan fan club, by the way. You are
a great player.
He is your wide receiver six. And then, by the way, you have 11 wide receivers that all have grades within like 3/10 of a point of one another. Based on what I'm seeing here real quick, maybe it's 4/10 of a point. But I'm more than happy to have somebody else rave about why they love Jalen McMillan so much. And then you have Jalen Polk right next to him, right? So the two good wide receivers, but they're so, so different.
Yeah, I'll start with McMillan. You know, McMillan kind of goes into the, I really fall in love with these receivers who just do the right thing. Like, be where you're supposed to be at the time that you're supposed to be there and catch the ball. And man, McMillan is, I mean, one of the best at that in this class. He, at Washington, mostly played from the slot. I actually think in the NFL he can play more outside. It's just that when they had Rome Odunze and Jalen Polk at Washington, it's like, well, somebody has to play from the slot, and they just chose it to be Jalen McMillan. It's very similar to how I think, you know, Justin Jefferson got pigeonholed into the slot at LSU.
Right.
Obviously, I don't think he's as good as Jefferson, but it's just that type of problem that they had at Washington. Very good problem to have. But you just watch McMillan, and it's just like, man, against zone coverage, he always knows how to uncover himself. Against man coverage, I think he's a very snappy, detailed route runner. Just a guy who buys himself that extra half step at the top of a route. Like, just a guy who makes himself very quarterback friendly. And then to that point, I think just as much as Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan made Michael Penix look more accurate than he is. Like, just some of those throws over the middle or in the short area where he is just snagging a ball just outside his frame, maybe going to his knees to grab a ball. Like, he just, has that adaptability to find the ball no matter what. And he's really tough, like just very willing to make those catches over the middle of the field. So he, to me, is just maybe with the ball in his hands, he's not the most sexy guy, you know, kind of like last year we did this with Jaxon Smith-Njigba. You know, where with the ball, he's not all that explosive, but everything else, just a guy who is going to give you really consistent production. And I just like that a lot from him.
Then you have a lot of the same names that we all do, kind of in that high mid second round type of area, the Xavier Worthies, the Ladd McConkeys, all these guys we've talked about. One guy that we haven't talked a bunch about, I know you're a big fan of his, so I'll give you a chance to talk about him. And there's off the field stuff, we understand that. But in terms of on field, Jermaine Burton, tell me why he should be a second round pick.
Dude, that's the thing. The off field stuff seems to be not very good. You know, when you end up getting pushed out of Georgia and then even at Alabama, they're not like fully leaning into you as the player that you are. That's a little bit concerning. But I think if you like purely didn't know any of that and you just watched what he is as a receiver, I would have even had like a top 40 grade on him. Like he is just one. His deep speed is not like special, but it's very good. It's like, you know, Doug Baldwin-esque, where it's like, okay, this guy can very clearly separate from people. It's not DeSean Jackson, but he can very clearly burn people down the field. As a route runner, I think he is super snappy. There are a couple times where he can run his routes a little bit upright and he'll get, you know, stuck at the top of them. But I think in general, he's a very snappy, explosive route runner, very detailed in the way that he just knows how to toy with defenders. He understands when and why they want to open their hips with certain coverages and stuff like that. I think he does a really good job with that. And then, dude, the ball skills. Holy smokes. He is so just, he knows how to find the ball. You know, very natural, like extending his hands away from his frame. He's very confident in the way that he attacks the ball. And then just on the sideline, some of the acrobatics he can make and like somehow get his feet down. It's like, Jesus, man, like he is already doing like the, you know, 5-year NFL vet type of stuff with just understanding space and understanding how to finish plays. So he, to me, is the guy who I think, off-field stuff withstanding, could walk in and be a very good number two, like almost immediately, like just a very polished, explosive player.
You're ready for a change. Payday comes early with Citizens, so go to that retreat. New you moves to the country. Now you're raising goats and launching a lifestyle brand. Are you ready for all that life brings?
You got time for two more receivers and running backs, Derek?
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. You're not as high in Troy Franklin as I am. I think Troy Franklin is fast. I think for a guy that of his length, breaks off routes very, very well. He catches deep balls. He's number one receiver in his program, high target share, all that stuff. But you have him kind of towards the back end of that stack we talked about. I have him towards the top end of that stack for me. What are some of the red flags for you with Troy Franklin?
You know, it's funny. When I first graded Franklin initially, I kind of did have him closer to the top of the stack. But then it was kind of what I was talking about earlier, where I started charting Bo Nix. He just, it felt like I noticed the bad plays more, maybe. Like I noticed that I think Franklin specifically, he really struggles when you get hands on him. I mean, he's 178 pounds, yep, at like 6'2" or whatever. Like he's just a very wiry string bean type of build. And so it's not surprising that when you get hands on him, he just doesn't have answers. And I think that's both true at the line of scrimmage and then even deeper on routes. Like if he's running like a, you know, 12-yard stop route and, you know, a lot of the best guys like Roma Dunze, if you see him run this, he'll stop and he'll just at that last step kind of explode, push off, get himself that yard of separation. Franklin just, it's not in his bag because he is never going to have the weight or explosiveness to push off of guys that way. And so I think that that's an issue. I think he just doesn't really have that contested catch type of stuff for basically the same reason. Like,
yeah, it's fair.
I think people got to remember, like when you go up for a ball in the air, you're not just fighting the air. Like, you know, it's not just like how explosive are you? You're fighting the corner. Like you've got to get through whatever weight he's putting against you. I just struggle to see that with Franklin. And then to me, he has really good flashes of deep ball tracking, but I noticed a little bit too, like if he is a little bit contested and like the corner is really step for step with him, he kind of loses sight of it a little bit. And so obviously there are instances where he's just so fast that that's never going to come into play. And he just is 3 yards past the guy anyway. But I did think that that was a little bit of an issue. So to me, Franklin falls into the more like, I think as your number two, who is like a speed Z type of guy, I think he could be kind of nice. Like I think in a lot of ways, I think he could be used a lot like Darius Slayton has been used in New York, where he's very much just a vertical guy, kind of inconsistent, but you know, the best plays are really good. It's just that that type of receiver should not be your best receiver. And I think the Giants have learned that.
No, I think that's fair. I'm with you. All right. Last guy who fascinates me, and this is maybe a wider conversation. How would you use Johnny Wilson? Because he tested a lot better than I thought he would at the combine. He catches everything. He's long. I think he's a pretty good route runner. But we haven't really seen a wide receiver look or move like that guy at that size. So how would you just use him in an offense?
Honestly, I think you just got to treat him like a traditional vertical X receiver, like a an AJ Green or something like that. And obviously, it's not super similar body types. But like, I'm kind of with you. Like when you look at Johnny Wilson, or like when you're just going into his film, you know, you look at his measurables, he's like 6'7", 240. It's like, oh, Jesus, this guy's going to be a tree. He's not going to be able to move. And then you look at him on the field the first snap and you're like, oh my Christ, there's no way this guy is going to be able to move. But then you watch him run like 10 routes and you're like, wait a minute. like there are obviously times because he's so big and lanky that he can't like fully throttle down and it takes him a couple of steps. But
yeah, long strider. Which is right. Not surprising. He's 6'6", he's 6'8".
Exactly. Like at a certain point, your body is what it is. But I think he still moves like fairly well for that size. He's very nimble, very agile for that size. And then to your point about long striding, like it takes him a couple of seconds to get going. But when he's really running on like go balls and posts and stuff, he can get moving, dude. Like he can actually pull away from people. It's pretty surprising. So I've actually kind of liked what I've seen from Johnny Wilson. Again, my grade isn't super high because, again, to your point, there's just not guys who look like this. So it's hard to find like a thing in my mind where it's like, I know this is what it can look like. So you kind of have to do some guesswork, but I don't know. I think there is a world where he could just be a traditional X receiver and be a really good vertical presence, running a lot of like go balls, stop routes, some of your comebacks, like, you know, deeper out routes, that type of stuff. I think he could be that type of receiver, you know, a place like Buffalo where they really need a guy like that. I think that would be super cool landing spot. So very intriguing prospect. I liked him again, like kind of like you said, I liked him more than I thought I was going to just based on what he looks like.
Giant fans love a winner. It's why they love Citizens, named a 2022 best bank in the U.S. by The Banker. As the official bank of the Giants and sponsor of the huddle, Citizens is made ready for fans of Big Blue. Learn more at citizensbank.com. All right, Derek, let's get into the running backs here. And I'll start very simply. When should the first running back get picked and who should it be?
Oh, that's such a complicated question, this class. I think for sure we are not getting anyone in the first round. I think we probably won't get anyone until, you know, maybe the mid to late second. Like if I had to set the over under, it would be like 49 and a half, basically. And that's not based on exactly who picks here. That's just like general range. But yeah, it would probably be like around pick 50. I think the most likely candidates are probably going to be like Jonathan Brooks. Maybe a Blake Corum, maybe a Trey Benson. Me personally, and I know that this sounds crazy based on what he ran at the combine, I love Audric Estime. I think he is just an unbelievable player. He ran 4.7 at the combine, and that's going to scare a lot of people. You watch his film, that is not a 4.7
No,
player.
He's like, I don't know. Sudden for a guy that big. He's a sudden mover. I was pretty impressed by his quickness, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he's like 6'2", 225. I mean, just built like a tank. And he, to your point, he's so much more fluid, so much more explosive, so much more just has burst than you would think for a guy who, again, is built like a tank. So he's got all that going for him. I think the vision for a guy who was playing at, I think, 20 years old is phenomenal. Obviously, when you're playing behind the Notre Dame offensive line, that helps a little bit, but I just thought he did such a good job of understanding how to play tight to blocks, understanding exactly when to cut it up, you know, never really stopping his feet behind the line of scrimmage, you know, not a guy who's just wasting time or anything like that. And then he is, you know, he's never going to be a Christian McCaffrey, Austin Eckler type of receiver, but like for his size, he's very much a guy who I am comfortable with catching passes, you know, a lot of check down screens, that type of stuff, like way more than you get from like Derrick Henry, for example. So I think he kind of checks that box. So for me, he's just, if I'm going to bet on a running back, I want big guy, one, first of all, so he can be my lead back. I want young player, which obviously he was. I think he was 20. He's going to be 21, I think, at the draft. And then just a guy who I think has the explosive profile that he has. And obviously, you know, he didn't run very well at the combine. His jumps were pretty good for his size, though. Yeah. And so I think this was just a case of like, for some reason, he just doesn't know how to run a 40. But then you watch him on film and like, especially the NC State game, like there are times where he is legitimately pulling away from linebackers and safeties with ease. And like, getting even further the more he runs, like it, like just separating from guys. So like I think he's a lot faster than he tested, and like he to me is just someone in my mentions actually said that he's like if you strapped a jetpack to Gus Edwards. That's kind of what I see him as.
That's not bad.
Which to me is like a pretty good player, especially in this class where there's no clear, like, you know, other number one running back that there should be.
And given the criteria you just set out, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that Braylon Allen is so high on your list. He's young, he's really big, and he has that production. I got to be honest with you, Derek. I did not watch anything before 2023. And his 2023 film, like, he's big. He doesn't run like a big guy, though. And I'm a little worried about whether or not he's going to play to those measurables. Should I go back and watch some of his earlier tape when Wisconsin was running their old school Wisconsin stuff?
I do think that would help. I think him getting the 2023 Phil Longo offense or whatever was a really just bad fit for the type of player he is. I don't think you're wrong to say that he doesn't run to his body type, though. He's a guy who's like, again, he's like 6'3", 6'4", 240 pounds. You think you're going to get Brandon Jacobs, yeah, but you don't. You get a guy who is really more, I think he's actually very nimble and very loose for a guy his size. But he's not a guy who just like runs through people. Like there are times where, you know, if he needs to move a pile, he can do it. But he's not a guy who is just trucking through people all the time. He's actually more of like a nimble, I'm trying to read out the field, you know, trying to read out my blocks, really trying to be a patient runner. I actually have said I want him to like cut 10 to 15 pounds and just lean into being the big nimble guy. This is something that Le'Veon Bell did coming out of Michigan State. Like people didn't know what he was at his body type. And then he just lost 15 pounds in the NFL. And suddenly he was one of the most, patient fluid runners in the NFL. Obviously I don't think Allen's going to get there, but I think that type of path is better for him than, you know, staying at 240 and just like, you know, learn to run over guys. You're not going to learn to run over guys. Like that's just not something you figure out. Like you either have that mentality or you don't. So I would like to see him cut a little pounds and just kind of lean into his fluidity and stuff like that. The other thing with Allen, you know, he is complicated. He has some issues, like you said, you know, doesn't play to his size, but very, very young player. You have to keep in mind, this was a guy who declared a year early out of high school. So he's like the youngest player in the draft. And so one at running back just for longevity, that's kind of a nice thing. But then two, you just got to understand, like there is still a bit of a learning curve here, especially when, again, like you said, 2022, he was running a normal NFL-ish offense, like what it would look like an NFL run game. 2023, not at all. This was the 2x2 spread. You're running inside zone all the time. Like that's just, he's not going to be that in the NFL. I think there's stuff to like, but I do totally get why he, you know, has scared some people off.
I couldn't get Ray Davis to the top of my running back list, Derek, but I think I might have liked his tape better than any other running back. But you take the age, you take the lack of elite testing, but just playing the position, that dude can play running back and step in day one in the NFL and be an 18 a carry a game guy, and he's going to be a good running back for you.
100%. This is a guy, yeah, if you look at everything but the tape, you're like, geez, I don't know if I want to draft this guy. Because he's like 25, multiple transfers, I think. Didn't test very well. But man, you watch him play and it's like, in terms of understanding how to pace yourself as a runner, making decisions, playing tight to blocks, you know, jam your foot in the ground and go, like not wasting time behind the line of scrimmage. He might be the cleanest runner in the class, man. And obviously, you know, you're 25, you've seen a lot of football, you should be. But he is. So he at least delivers on that. And then he's a really thick runner who does kind of play to his size. He can run through people. His balance is I think, phenomenal. And then, you know, he's not the fastest or most explosive guy, but I think for a guy who is more built like a bowling ball, he's got enough to him. It's almost like Ray Rice-ish where it's like, okay, he's not super explosive, but for that size, he's got enough to him. And then really what shocked me with him, he's kind of a pretty good receiver. Like there were times where he was running like wheel routes and like seam routes in this offense. And I was like, you are not built like that type of player, but he was doing it anyway. And his hands on those instances was really, really good. So he, to me, is just a guy who, again, to your point, I think you can, one, just because of his size, give him, you know, 18, 20 carries a game if you need to. But then he just checks a lot of the mental boxes. You know, like I said, like just handles himself well as a runner, really useful pass catcher. I think in pass protection, he can be a little all over the place, but he's got the mentality. He's got the strength to do it. I think you can teach him a little bit. So he's just, to me, like, man, at the very least, like this is a useful number two to have. You know, maybe the ceiling is limited, but he's just a useful guy to have. I like him.
Last running back one for you, and I can't quite put my finger on it. I watched Marshawn Lloyd. He's 5'9", and I actually like short runners. I don't mind short runners. I'm fine with them. He's almost 220 pounds. His side-to-side movement skills and quickness and explosiveness is off the chart. He tested to that. But when you watch him, and I don't know if it's vision or instincts, I just think there's something a little bit missing that's keeping him out of that kind of Brooks, Trey Benson category for me. I noticed that's kind of the same with the way you have Marshawn Lloyd graded. Why?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so with you. Like, I think there are reasons, you know, I get why people like him. You know, he's like 5'9", 220, very thick back, really explosive for that size. Like, he's a very good mover for that size. He's a runner who is willing to run through people. I think his balance is nice. When he does just put his foot in the ground, it looks really pretty. But I kind of agree with you on the vision. Like, he's kind of a runner who's five times a game just doing his own thing. And it's like, man, that's you better be like Jahmyr Gibbs type of athlete level explosiveness if you're going to try that BS. And I think he's, you know, a really good athlete, but I don't know if he's quite there. And so I think it's going to be a long learning curve to get him to understand that stuff. The other thing I think people are not quite getting about Marshawn Lloyd, this dude fumbles all of the time. Like, he has one of the highest fumble rates that I can remember. And then you even just watch him play, and it's like at least once a game, he just coughs up the ball somehow. And it's like, that's just not going to fly in the NFL. Like, if you remember last year, there was Dwayne McBride, kind of a different player. But he was a guy who it's like, man, you just watch him run and it's like, okay, this looks like an NFL back, and he just cannot stop giving up the football. It's like, that alone is just, teams are just not going to want to deal with it. Lloyd actually reminds me a lot. This is kind of like off the wall. He reminds me a lot of like Christine Michael with the Seahawks, where it's like, man, the athleticism and his best plays, you want to buy in so bad. It looks so good. But the inconsistency with the vision and then all the fumbles, and then it's just like, it's just going to be, I think, hard for coaches to live with some of that stuff to get him to the point where he can be more consistent. So I get it. I understand why people like him, but I'm kind of with you where I just can't quite get there all the way.
All right, now go running back and receiver. Last one, Derek. Give me one late day three guy that you really think could develop into something special that you think people are undervaluing or overlooking at both wide receiver and running back.
I mean, at running back, I think my kind of guy I liked a little bit was Juwar Jordan. A small guy who did not test very well, which is a really not great sign. But you just watch him. And I think when you're picking guys in this day three range, it's totally fine for me to just pick guys who we know he checks a lot of boxes, and I know what his role can be. He, to me, is just a very, very smart runner. You know, he's if we block for four, he's going to get four. You know, he's just not going to mess it up. And I think that that's super valuable. And then I think as a pass catcher and pass blocker, he really understands what's going on. He's a guy who checks a lot of boxes. He just knows what's going on in the game. He reminds me a lot of actually like Kyren Williams. It probably won't be like as good as what Kyren was this year, but just, again, a small guy, didn't test all that well, but just knows how to play the game, man. And that to me is a guy that I would like to take a chance on in that range. Day three receivers. You know what? I actually really kind of liked, the more I watched him, Malik Washington out of Virginia. I typically don't love these smaller receivers, I'll be honest, but he is just a guy where you watch him play and it's just, he is in the right spot all the time. When he's running like shallow crossers, this sounds like such a dumb thing, you know, oh, a shallow crosser, but he knows exactly where to sit down against zone coverage. He knows exactly when to throw his hands up when the quarterback needs him to. And then with the ball in his hands, man, that dude can move. Like, he is just so twitchy, so quick, so explosive, really good vision. And he's a lot tougher and thicker than you would think. Like, I think he's like 5'8", 5'9". But he's like 190, 195
pounds.
So for that size, he's big.
I talked to him one-on-one down at Shrine, and I was right next to him. And he's built kind of like a Darren Sproles-ish type of guy. He's thick like a runner. By the way, same thing with Malachi Corley. We didn't talk about him.
Yes.
He literally is built like Saquon Barkley. Like, you stand next to him, and I've been next to Saquon in the locker room for 15 years here. He's built like Saquon. So you're 100% right about his build. That guy could take a little bit of a pounding.
Yeah, and I think when you're going to be, you know, he's going to be a slot only just because of his size. But when you're a slot only, it's nice to have guys who are thicker, because if you're just running routes over the middle, you're either going to take hits catching the ball, or you're just going to have a lot of these quick run after catch opportunities. And again, you're going to take hits. But he's got the build for it. I'm glad you mentioned Corley real quick. It feels like Washington is like, if you can if you miss out on Worley, you can take Washington a round and a half later and you'll be like, I'm fine here. This is okay. I don't feel bad about it.
Yeah, I think some people put Leggett into that category as well. I think he's a little bit different. And I actually like Corley a little bit more than I like Leggett, who I don't see the same run after catches as I do for him. But that's a longer conversation. Derek, awesome stuff. One more time, tell the folks what you want them to check out.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at QBClass with a K. Obviously, over at Bleacher Report, I have all my skill position grades, and then you can check out the rest of our big board. We actually just finalized our final big board on Thursday. That'll be released Monday or Tuesday. I'm not 100% positive, but definitely early before draft week. And then over at Reception Perception, I do a lot of my quarterback charting. I have charted most of the quarterbacks who will get drafted this year, hopefully all of them. And then I'll be doing some NFL charting during the offseason.
Can't wait to see it. Derek Klass, we thank you for joining us on the Giants Huddle podcast, brought to you by Citizens, the official bank of the Giants. Folks, we're in a sprint to the draft. Only a couple episodes to go. Stay tuned as we continue to get ready for the 2024 NFL draft.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.